Listeners be advised. The Holiloquy podcast discusses matters related to the human experience and many that are sexual in nature. Due to this, some conversations may surround triggering topics such as sexual violence, self-harm, abuse, and much more. Please be advised. A list of crisis and psychological resources will be available in the show notes of this episode. With that said, let's get started with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please, as we go through the following safety instructions.
In the event that there is a loss of cabin pressure, oxygen mask will drop from the overhead. Place the mask over your nose and mouth. Breathe normally as oxygen is flowing even if the mask is not accessible. Be sure to adjust your own mask before helping others.
Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to the Holiloquy podcast, where we step out and speak on sexuality. This is your favorite host, Vernon T. Scott, also known as Slater Drexton, and for you freaking motherfuckers out there, Sebastian Adams. On today's episode, we are going to be getting some spiritual work done. We're working through some trauma. We're going through a lot of a discussion as it relates to sex work. And with me, I'm blessed to have Michelle Shakina with me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great now that I'm here with you. Thank you.
Stop making me smile.
But it's such a pretty smile.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So today we will be talking about a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. But before we even get into the conversation, do you mind introducing yourself to the audience just so that they know a little bit about you? We'll go from there.
Okay. So my name is not Michelle. It's an alias that I'm using because, unfortunately, I have to protect myself and my kids, but myself mostly. I am a woman who's middle-aged, and I was a stay-at-home mother for over 20 years, and pretty cool and a lot of fun. Very involved with the kids. Both of them had some special needs when they came out, and I worked with that. I had a lot of people helping me with them. I had a team of people for both of them. I was PTA president, room parent, all of that. I had my own businesses. My ex-husband had his, and I supported him and made him his breakfast and his lunches with little notes in them. I was that wife and mom, and I loved it. And we were married for a good 17 years, and then something happened. Traumatically for me, I lost somebody who I was really, really close with, who was vibrant and loved life and went to concerts and danced and all that goes along with that. And when she died suddenly, I was obviously very distraught and came home to my husband. And I said, I really want to live my life to its fullest and enjoy it for myself as well as for her, because you never know. Mm. And I did not realize what I was saying and who I was saying it to. Mm. And I'll lead with that, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you for that, because the story after that gets the table starts to turn.
Yes.
I know I typically within these episodes, the recordings in general, they have like a trigger warning, but at least I can do a live trigger warning for those people now, because we are going to be talking about some tough topics. So trigger warning for sexual assault, sexual violence, as well as non-consensual sex work. So that has been put out there for you all so we can engage in this conversation. I know that from our conversation with building this episode and, the intake meeting and all that, we discussed your experience with your ex-husband. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead, pull the Band-Aid off and just jump right on into it.
Okay, let's do it. I'm an open book. Anything goes, because I want anyone that they need to learn that they can get through it if they've been there. So when I say that I don't know who I was telling that to, I didn't realize that my ex-husband was living a second life full of drugs, alcohol, sexual deviance, homosexuality, all of that. And I realize now, looking back, first of all, I'm doing very well. So there is a light beyond that dark tunnel. I am doing very well. I've worked really hard at it. So if you are in that situation or any situation of trauma, know you can get through it. What happened was he very slowly started to groom me, as they say, for what his desires were. So when we would go out, it was, why don't you wear something a little sexier? You know, I really like it with your hair being longer. So, you know, y'all know that the hair gets weaved in and it's getting longer. And then he's got a vision of what he wants it to be. So I really changed who I looked like. And I mean, I looked pretty dope, but you know what? It wasn't me. It really wasn't me. And so then it was, let's go out and let's have a few drinks more than we normally would. Okay. And then we go home and we're together. And then next time it's, let's go out and have a few drinks and then let's go to a bar after and go home. And then the sex afterwards is even more so. And then let's go out the next time and I want you to try this. And he started bringing out the drugs. Now, anyone that knows me in my real life knows that I'm just not good with this kind of thing, because things that you're supposed to blow into your nose, I would just like sneeze or blow out and it would get all over. Like, it was kind of funny because I had no idea what I was doing. And if I drank too much, I got sick. So I was like the worst drug addict and alcoholic that anyone could be. But he insisted, and, you know, being my husband, I wanted to please him. I wanted him to want me, because what I noticed was the more open I allowed it, the more attention he was seeking and giving to other people. And at that point, I found myself in desperate mode of, whatever you want to do, I'll do. Again, not having a clue as to what that meant to him. So what that meant to him was putting me on display. So we met other people that, not necessarily swingers, though he did bring me to a swinger club, which is fine if that's your thing, but it was about him being in the environment and me doing stuff, or him doing something, mostly me, and letting other people touch me. And, you know, I was one that was, nobody came near me. I was his wife. We were connected, but I didn't know what he wanted. So it was a shock to me. And it wasn't sex. It did not start out with sex. And then what happened was we met other people, other friends. There were three sets of friends eventually. And then it was all about, again, putting me on display. Look at what I can have my wife do. Look at what I can make her do. Look at what she does. You know, it was, Michelle, come out in that sexy outfit. And then, you know, putting me on the floor and putting drugs on me and then letting them, you know, take it off of me in whatever form they would. And, you know, things like that. And it started getting more intense. You know, they use the word escalation. He apparently was watching a lot of porn, which I knew, but I didn't know what he was watching. I knew that he loved watching stuff where he would watch me with another man. Or he would watch that, and then he wanted to see that in me. So, you know, we're at a hotel, and I mean, this is how clueless I was. We're at a hotel in Vegas. He'd gone lots of times and without me. And then, you know, at 6 a.m., we'd already been to the clubs, and we're sitting at a bar in a lobby. Not one person in the lobby except for the people working. And this great looking guy comes and he sits down next to me. I mean, beautiful, great suit. He's got this gorgeous, beautiful British accent, all of that, right? And I should have known, because he loved British accents, my ex-husband. And he starts, I mean, he sits right next to me as opposed to the entire bar that's empty. And I start talking to him because I'm friendly and what have you. And then all of a sudden my ex comes up and he puts his arm around both of us and says, hey, how are you doing? And as if he's known this guy. Again, my ex was, you know, he was three sheets. So I figured that's pretty normal. But then I excused myself because it wasn't, you know, when they start to make coffee for the next morning and you're still in your outfit from last night, you know, the dress, you want to go upstairs. So I went upstairs, you know, 20 minutes later, the husband comes up and he's like, I hope you don't mind, I brought somebody with me. And at that point, the guy walks in and they shut the door behind them. And I freak out because I don't know. I mean, there was no agreement. There was no discussion. There was no, are you okay with this? Really? There was no nothing. It was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And he's like, don't worry. Here's more drugs. Here's another drink. And I'm telling you, now it's like 7 o'clock in the morning. And so what happened was my ex would control every environment we'd be in. He'd make sure he had enough for everybody and that he controlled how everybody was feeling. So even like some of the guys that were involved, even if they didn't really want to do anything, they wanted to watch, let's say, or they wanted to leave, he would make sure that everybody was not coherent enough to really make that decision, a sober decision. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the question is, was I the only one that had, was it non-consensual or was it really everybody? So, and then one of the things he would do is he would walk away. So I'm there with this guy on the bed and I have no idea where he came from. And he's trying to, the guy was actually nicer to me than my ex-husband was. And that was usually the case. And then he would walk away, my ex, because he loved the whole cheating wife thing, which apparently is a porn thing too. Oh, and he would, right. Yeah. And he would walk, or the hot wife, all of that. And he would walk away. And, you know, my thing is, well, if this is something we're supposed to do together, I'm not going to do anything while you're gone. So I just sit there and wait. And it was the most uncomfortable situation that I could be in. And, you know, if it were me now, none of that would happen. Obviously, I would run out. I would know better. But I still was like, I was not coherent very much. So I wouldn't say I wasn't coherent. I just wasn't sober. And I was, but yet I was sober enough to think, what does he want? What is his objective? What does he want me to do? Like, what is this all about? And again, he still controlled it. And this went on to like noon the next day and till we had to get on an airplane. And, you know, we got home and he was so excited about the whole situation that happened. And he kept saying that he was happy that he got close to the other guy and that this was something he really wanted for a long time. And it was just, you know, I could see a whole different person, someone I didn't know existed there. And again, it's fine if there's agreements, if there's discussions and agreements, anything. There were none. So that was like one of the first situations or the first situation. And then meeting these groups of friends, it was walking into something that everybody else was doing. And we were the last participants. And I was very much included. Because part of it was I was very different. I was the only one that was married for so long, and I was the only one who only wanted to be with him and didn't want him to be with anybody else. And it wasn't always about sex. It was always about sexuality. It was always about sensuality. It was about drinking and drugs.
The Holiloquy podcast focuses on the variability of sexual expression. When it comes to sexual expression, we often depend on pornography to illustrate how one must perform sexually. For those who have not learned this by now, the stuff you see in porn is not real. Pornography provides a singular perspective of sexual expression that is not often the reality we see during our own sexual encounters. The Holiloquy podcast is a conversation that takes you outside of the compressed box of what many know about sex. Some of the topics we discuss includes kinks, condom usage, status disclosure, and past sexual experiences. The Holiloquy podcast steps out on sexual norms and recognizes that the norm is not the only normal. Subscribe today and join the conversation.
It wasn't always about sex. It was always about sexuality. It was always about sensuality. It was about drinking and drugs. Everybody had a red Solo cup in their hands. My drinks were always made for me. And, you know, I could see my behavior change after a few sips or after a drink. But yet I couldn't do anything about it. It was like that space between knowing that your behavior, being aware that your behavior's changed, but yet you can't do anything because you're not in that mental capacity to do it. So with that, it was at that point, you know, he knows everything about me and my childhood wounds, right? All of that stuff that we work on. And so now he's telling people about them and he's confronting me about them in a funny way. He thinks he's being funny, like, oh, she wants attention. Let me rip off her shirt and put drugs on her and let anyone do anything they want, whatever it is. And it would be like one right after the other. And, you know, there were some situations where he'd put me on a table. And again, if I would sit up, the drugs came back out, the drinking came back out, the shame and the guilt of it would come back out. You know, like, you're going to ruin the night. Don't you want this? Don't you want this? This is so good for our marriage. Would you rather me be with somebody else? And so the choices really were slim for me. Mm-hmm. And even if I pushed back, I also got shushed, or I got, you know, pushed down or hand over my mouth or what have you. And he was always the ringleader, taking pictures and videos, which he still has blackmail. There were moments in the back of a club in a closet where I was put in with the owner of the club and another person and him and security at the door. So I couldn't get out, or nobody could get in, and the security's really watching what's going on. And, you know, my ex would just come up to me and lift up my dress. And, you know, and that kind of stuff went on, and it was 6 years of that. Mm. You know, it was a lot. It was a lot. And not just what was going on outside the home, but inside our own room. It was strangulation, which, again, if that's something you're into, that's awesome. But there's a point where you don't make somebody pass out on purpose. Hmm. And if they're passed out, you stop having sex with them. You don't keep going, but he did. And it was like coming out of death and having someone just raping you and not knowing. Because when you come out of being unconscious, you have no idea where you are. It feels like you're free falling from, you know, 100-foot building. And then there was that. And all I could do was just lay there and take it, pretty much. And that happened two times, I remember. But he would just make me pass out. We'd be laying watching TV and he would just put his hands around me. And I thought, oh, okay, he wants to, you know, be playful and sexy. And before I knew it, I had passed out, because he liked that. He liked, as he put it, he would say, I like putting you in uncomfortable situations. That was what got him off, I guess. And then there were times when he'd be behind me in our bedroom and put a belt around my neck. And again, that wasn't my choice. That wasn't, hey, can we try this? It just would appear. Mm. And it would be to the point where I was scared for my life. And, you know, I remember the next day going to our therapist and saying what had happened. And the guy's yelling at me and he's saying, you can't let him do that anymore. Of course, I didn't choose for him to do that. He's like, you could have died. And I'm like, I know. And mm-hmm. So apparently my ex went and told him that it was my choice to do that. And I'm thinking, who in their right mind would want to have any of that happen to them, to the point where there is no consent? There is no consent. And it's that close between life and death. For me, as a mother of my kids, you know, I wouldn't want that. So, but again, there was so much. There was so much being on top of him and having me call him different names of people that he had crushes on, men, or someone that he had put me with, and him recording it. So it looks like I'm with that person, and all of that. So there was a lot. There was a lot of non-consensual acts that went on. So I don't know how much you want me to tell. There's more, but that's enough.
There's a lot more. And I appreciate mm-hmm. you for sharing what you have shared, because it does give people a look on how grooming work, how smooth that process can mm-hmm. be, and how it could just literally blindside you. You think, I'm pleasing my partner. We're just doing these things. Yep. You know, I want to make them happy. They want to make me happy. So I'm just doing what I can for them to mm-hmm. facilitate that happiness. And the entire time, they're putting you in more uncomfortable positions as time goes past.
Oh, yeah, he definitely did. He escalated it.
And then even the emotional manipulation and the use of drugs, like yes, the people get roofied to this day. It
Oh my
does
God.
happen,
Yep. Last year.
but many people don't understand that there's other ways that you can gradually get somebody into a point that they're willingly taking the drink. It's performed, it's made for you by a bartender and all of those great things. So you know that what you're taking in hand, it does not have any kind of strange drugs in and what have you. But your willingness to accept these drinks are also facilitating the potential risk of you being assaulted or violated or taken advantage of by someone that you care about or some stranger potentially. But statistically, it will be someone that you're close with, that you know. And I appreciate you for sharing that aspect too, because that's something
First.
that many people need to know to open their eyes about. Like, I'm a firm believer, like if two people are they have that established trust with their partner and they want to engage in intoxicated sex, then go for it. Have that, have those conversations. Do you enjoy it?
Sure, absolutely.
But oftentimes we also forget about the consensual side of that, where sometimes if there that trust doesn't exist, how that can be a violation of a person's body, or if they had no expectation or no thought or had that conversation with you about, oh, okay, so now we're having sex? No, I'm drunk. I want to go to bed.
Oh my gosh, we would come home because then it was like it was dinner. No, then it's dinner stopped actually. It was going to the bar, then it was going to the strip joint because they were open till like, 6, 7 in the morning, and he didn't want to go home because he was high as a kite, And again, that's your thing, cool. But make the arrangement and with the partner, because I also didn't want to have to be the designated driver. At some point, I had to decide, oh yeah, there's no way that he can drive. And I always made sure that I stopped at some point and just hydrated myself because, I wouldn't put myself in that position, in that safety. But we'd get home and he would keep doing the drugs. And it's 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm going to remind you, I have two children that I need to care for. So when I realized that how bad this was, and it was a few years before I left, I really had to change some of the things that were going on without him knowing, where he'd be like, go in the bathroom and do this. And, or he'd give me a drink and I wouldn't finish it, or I would spill it and I'd drink water because I knew that I had to be the responsible one and I had to be the mother, because even if I slept for 2 hours, I got up with those kids and I made them breakfast and took care of them. I mean, granted, they were older at this point, but it's just who I am. I'm still that responsible person. If it was a point where I was working again and he wanted to go out, I would still get up and go to work. It's hard as that was. It was really, really tough because he's has his own business. So even now he's still doing the same stuff and he sleeps all the time. But there were moments when I would wake up, we'd go out with friends and see these friends of ours. There were different groups, like I said, but the guys were like my brothers, or so I thought. And when they started seeing his personality shift, because he stopped being mean to me just at home, he started being mean to me outside of the home. And this was towards the end. This was towards the end. And I thought, these guys are going to protect me because they care about me. Well, most of them had their own agenda, and it wasn't that. And even the women knew what was going on. And they were like the mean girls. They included me, and these were. Some of them were friends like for years. And I thought, okay, childhood wound. They want to be friends with me. Okay. And these are beautiful, successful people and all of that. The whole scene, something out of a movie. And, here it is. I'm mothering day in and day out, and these people weren't. And I thought, okay, they want to be friends with me. It's fun and exciting. But again, did not know they had their own agenda. Like I would walk in with presents for people, or you know, I stay home with cookies for people, and they're like looking at me like with all their red cups. They're like, what are you doing? Like, why are you bringing us this? And I'm like, that's what I do. That's how I was raised. And you know, you walk into someone's house, it's what you do. Mm-hmm. Well, sure enough, at 4 a.m. when everyone's hungry, cause they haven't eaten all day, all night, you know? But anyway, so the point is with the drinks, like we would be out to dinner and one of his friends, one of the guys would get a drink from a bar outside. We're sitting inside. I would have it. I'd wake up in the hotel bathroom 2 hours later on the floor and not knowing where I was. And my ex would have my son, who was an older teenager, walk in and find me. And I would have no explanation. 1 minute I'm sitting having a martini and some nachos and food. And then the next minute I'm waking up. So, Mom, are you in here? And what, you know, so there's a big gap there. Well, what happened from A to Z? I can't answer you. And then there was a time where I woke up in someone's house. No idea how I got there. No idea. And when my ex got drunk, he was really talkative. He would babble a lot to the point where once he said, I'm a horrible person. I'm a monster. I'm a horrible person. Because he got so drunk to the point where he wouldn't sit still. I'd put him in bed, he'd end up on the floor. I'd put him in bed, he'd go walking around. He'd want to walk into our kids' rooms, which I had to hold him back. He'd end up in the bathtub. And this is a big guy. So, you know, at one point he said to me in slurring of his words, when you go out, you don't ever sign the check. You drink water between one drink and another and you drink it slowly. So he was giving me the answers of, yes, I planned this. This happened because of me. And this is what you should have done. He said, don't sign the check. There'll be no evidence that you were there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's really, really, so he's one of the best salespeople that you'd ever meet because there's no conscience, like he doesn't care, thinks above and better. And it's not about him per se, it's about the personality. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and some of these personalities we see on TV shows or in movies, The Wolf of Wall Street, you know, they think that they're above the law. And in that, there's a lot of entitlement. Mm. And, you know, people are pawns. So that's what I became. But what's really tricky that we have to look out for is when you come from, when you're with somebody who's an abuser, it's so confusing because it's 4 days on, 3 days off. They're great 4 days, they're bad 3 days. Or they're bad 4 days, they're good 3 days. And it's really tricky. Mm-hmm. To know. And if they're not hitting you in the face, like you see on all the signs, it's even more confusing because you're like, oh, they're having a bad moment or a bad day at work or somebody's not being nice to them. I can take it. I'm their partner. I can handle it. Mm. I'm their home. They can come home and do this. They'll be better tomorrow. Here, let me make them more of their favorite food, whatever it is, you know?
Yes.
But then on the weekends, it's, here's your martini before we leave while you're getting dressed. Here's the vial. If you don't do it, you're going to ruin the night and let's go. And, you know, it was, and I had no idea what to expect. I thought we'd be going out for a date night, just he and I, no kids, no friends, no family. And before I knew it, you know, I was being trafficked, told to crawl on the floor to his friend and, you know, go down on him. And it was terrible. It's horrible. So, you know, I've been diagnosed with chronic PTSD, obviously. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, there's PTSD and chronic. The PTSD is if you've had some sort of really like experience, you've noticed something, you've been through a tragedy, an explosion, an emergency that you witnessed or were part of. Chronic is it's happening for a long time. So mine was 6 years of that and 5 years afterwards, up until today, still there's financial abuse. Dealing with him and, you know, threatening to take my kids away and saying stuff to me, telling my kids that I slept with everybody that we know. And, you know, it's funny when you tell something to a really smart 13-year-old girl and she's like, well, how can mom be doing that if she's always at my school volunteering, you know, or how could she be doing this when you supposedly fell asleep first, but she always falls asleep when she's watching TV and you always stay up late. Like she really got it. But that's real. I mean, that's an abuse on a different level when you involve mm-hmm. the children. So.
Yes. And so for anybody who's keeping count of different forms of abuse, mm-hmm. we have sexual abuse, we have emotional mm-hmm. abuse, we have financial abuse, mm-hmm. we have verbal abuse, mm-hmm. and there might be others.
Well,
but
that's child. So that would be considered child abuse.
Child abuse. Yes. Yeah. So that's already five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and all of these are things that you've experienced within these years.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't know, you know, it's like, I didn't know what I didn't know. I keep saying that. Mm-hmm. Like, he admitted to getting the massages, you know, the special massages. Mm. He admitted to, you know, again, he went to Vegas. He'd be getting massages in his room. So he said, I mean, I don't know what they were. And I didn't even think about it because he had a bad back and I was so naive. But let me tell you, somebody's getting a massage in the room. I don't know if that's really, that's all they're getting.
Right.
So something to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, I think, mm-hmm. well, I feel like it's important to mention how much control he strives for, because like you mentioned, he will want to control the environment, mm-hmm. make sure mm-hmm. he has enough drugs for everybody, make sure that he knows yep. who's coming in and out of everything, of the situations, making sure he has control over your mm-hmm. life, your kids' lives, and even the attached emotional manipulation that he's using for your children, even right in this moment, on some level, he still has some sense of control because of those, like you mentioned, those videos mm-hmm. that he has mm-hmm. and how he can, if need be, in the mm-hmm. way that our society is, always have the ability to control the narrative mm-hmm. of everything that happened without even your voice being spoken or heard mm-hmm. because I'm going to be vulgar, people. Y'all know I'm vulgar, but who the fuck cares about these bitches' feelings right. and their words and all of that?
Right.
Like, she's a whore. She did all mm-hmm. this. So mm-hmm. we're going to be on his side because mm-hmm. she's out here tricking around with all his mm-hmm. friends. So mm-hmm. he's the victim here. And clearly,
right. right.
Like, who's the person with the camera if we're going to be having this conversation?
Exactly. So he would put me in situations. Well, first we'd go, you know, when I go to the bathroom, he'd, you know, we'd be out and I'd go to the restroom and he would say, take a sexy picture for me. And I mean, what partner wouldn't? Like, oh, wow, he really wants one. Because sometimes I'd send them to him, you know, if he was at work, you know, can't wait till you get home kind of thing. And I get no response. And then, so when he asked me for them, I gave them to him. I was like, oh, wow, he really wants that. But then he would set up pictures if we were at a friend's house. It would be, you guys get in the bathtub, put the towel over you to where it covers your clothes and pretend, and like put your head on him like you're sleeping and like you guys just had sex. And we're like, oh, that's so funny. Let's do that. Well, that's one of the over 200 something pictures that he's got. I mean, those sorts of things. Or, but even his friends were starting to manipulate me in the end. And, you know, because they knew he was so horrible to me. I mean, he was calling a lot of these girls like words that he shouldn't be calling them, the wives of some of these guys, and the guys wouldn't do anything. So, you know, that's who I was hanging around with. And so, you know, it was like, oh, send me a picture of yourself. I heard you took a great picture of yourself and send it to your husband. Let me see it, you know? And I'm like, oh, these guys are cool. We're like brother, sister, you know, and because I have older brothers and I'm like, all right, whatever, it's fine. Like, cause they see sexy women all the time. I'm nobody. And so then it was like, oh, I see you're sending sexy pictures to my friends. Cause the friends would send them to him and say that. Mm-hmm. So it was complete manipulation. I was so clueless. I had no idea. You know, in the end I was spinning every moment of every day. He had me spinning like I was in the whirlpool. And I didn't know which way was up. I didn't know what was real and what wasn't. Mm. The only thing I knew what was real is my mothering, because that's instinctual. I was raised in a traditional household. I'm a healthcare worker. I mean, you know, which I went right back into. So he could say whatever he want. I went back into healing people, you know, right after I left. And, you know, he's obviously not. So, you know, so there's a lot of stuff out there. And my thing now is like, bring it out. I'm not going to let anything scare me to that point anymore, because I tell my truth now. Mm-hmm. I'm a little careful for other reasons, but my child, my youngest, she figured it out. You know, she figured out everything because she sees his personality now. My older one, he does have a financial hold on him. So there is manipulation there. It's starting to break away, but, you know, I'm ready for it, because I did what any wife or partner would do if they truly loved their significant other and would do anything to keep the marriage or relationship going. I really am. I really did that, you know, and everyone knew how devoted I was. You know, I mean, my parents are still together after 60 years. His parents are still together. That's how we met. So I wanted that. And I would have done anything. And at that point, you know, he really took my hand and he took me down a path and through a tunnel into the world of Alice in Wonderland. I didn't even know any of that existed. I mean, I didn't tell my friends. My family was completely isolated. You know, he did all of those things. He talked so poorly about them that I didn't even want to be with them. And then my parents would come to our front door and he wouldn't let them in. He wouldn't let them see our kids for almost a year. So I didn't tell anyone. Nobody knew. The friends that I had in my religious organizations where I was, you know, involved in leadership and on the board and fundraising, all these things that, you know, we do, we stopped being with them, going out with them, because they were too boring for him. It was the other groups he wanted to be with. So I had no friend when I, you know, towards the end. I mean, I wasn't going to tell those people what was going on. I was ashamed of it. I was still protecting him too, because even though they abuse us, we still protect them.
Yeah.
We still do. Love. I mean, hole in the walls and everything. We still protect them. And look, I could come out now in the open, but I'm still protecting him. Mm-hmm. I'm protecting my safety, you know, more so.
Until and also your children.
I'm protecting my children, right. Mm-hmm. My youngest knows. Listen, she came out as being gay when she was 16, and he told her, don't tell your grandparents, they're almost dead anyway. And, you know, she and I celebrated. My parents knew, you know, half my family is gay, and she's just openly loved and respected. You know, we go to pride conventions, and well, she is part of Planned Parenthood, so she throws out condoms and educates kids in schools. And, you know, I'm the one that goes and hugs everybody, you know, I'm the mom. So, you know, and he's in the closet. So there's a lot of stuff there underneath it, which would make somebody do this to another person. Obviously, it's not liking themselves or loving themselves to the point where they are so narcissistic that it's like, I could do anything and get away with it. I can make her do this. And that's what they used to say. I was like a circus animal. I really was.
Yeah, I was thinking it's crazy that he, you know, to have that belief that he can do anything and get away with it, but cannot be himself.
Correct. It's very much a dichotomy on that. Yep. Yes. You're exactly. And it's sad because, you know, that's his own shame. Mm-hmm. It really is. I think that, you know, I don't know. There's not much I could say. He just has this image of what he wants people to think. He's all about image. Mm-hmm. And I remember we went out one Father's Day and we ended up going to a bar. Like I made a nice thing for him. And he's like, he wanted to go out. Drugs came out. I'm like, it's Father's Day. We did the whole thing all day with the kids, right? And his parents and whatever. Like, you want to go to a bar? He's like, yeah, it's Father's Day. I get to do what I want to do. Okay. We went to this bar and the drugs came out and he wanted me to do something different on him. And I'm like, what do you do? Like, what? Okay. And then we go in the bar and it happened to be after a pride parade. And there was a couple there, two men. And he couldn't keep his hands off. And they were married. He couldn't keep his hands off one of the guys. And the husband was a police officer. And he, my ex was following this guy everywhere. And, you know, I kind of knew. And the husband looked at me and he says, "Do you know that your husband is gay?" I mean, he said it a little differently, but, you know, I was like, "What?" He's like, "Honey," he's like, "I love you and you're beautiful." And he's ignoring you and he won't take his hands off of my husband. And if he doesn't stop, I'm going to punch him in the face. But he said, "Your husband is gay." And it was really a big shocker to me. And somebody had said to me that he put me in those situations because those are the situations he wanted to be in.
Mm.
Right. I haven't really accepted that yet, because I think that he just likes the deviance in general. But I mean, again, I always said I would have accepted him anyway. I would have loved it. That wouldn't have changed. And it would have been so much better for our children.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about, I mean, not just him. There's so many people walking around feeling that way. And it's sad. It's mm-hmm. sad because I believe everybody should be who they are. I mean, I walk around with a shirt with a rainbow that says, "Be you," and "Love is love." You know, we're very proactive in this household. You know, all of my daughter's friends are gay. They come in the house. I mean, this is the house of love. And, you know, and it's sad, you know, as much as I don't, that I went through that, I could still feel sorry for him in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And just hope and pray and bless from afar that one day he could step into who he really wants to be.
Yes.
Yeah, I really Hopefully. Do. Yeah, because I can forgive and I can heal myself.
Mm-hmm.
But someone who lives like that can't and is going to keep hurting people until he does that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the control that he's trying to get on people with me, it was the trackers, it was money. He's got a tracker in his ex-girlfriend's car. I mean, all this stuff. My daughter found it on her phone. But all of this control he's trying to do on other people, it's really because he doesn't know how to control his own life and his own thoughts and his decisions.
Mm.
But is so, like I said, so narcissistic, like, "I'm good. I'm cool. You know, this is me," and da 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 sort of thing. It's kind of fascinating because I can take myself out of it and think about it intellectually,
mm-hmm.
even though I could certainly be there emotionally and, you know, be crying hysterical, but I don't want to do that right at this moment.
Yeah.
But I try and understand people's behaviors on an intellectual level.
Yeah.
And especially when they're questioning their own sexuality, their gender, you know, you have to give space and grace for people like that. And I've been around for years now with the kids, more so, you know, mm-hmm. going through it. And I feel for someone like him because he's really hurting himself and he's hurting other people and his children.
Yeah.
My daughter doesn't want to go near him now because of his behavior. And not necessarily what he did to me, but what he has done and said to her in the last few months.
Yeah.
And it's sad. It's really sad.
Very.
Yeah.
Before we go into the Never Have yeah. I Ever segment, there was one last thing I did want to for you to speak on. Going to combine the two things. And
okay.
I think it would be something important for other people who may be in a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just to discuss what motivated you or encouraged you or gave you that courage to escape, and mm-hmm. also what it means to you to celebrate yourself.
Mm-hmm. Escaping was tricky. I wanted to escape 2 years before I did. When my daughter said to him one day, we're in the car, stop yelling at mom. I knew that I had to get out. I knew because he was being really horrible to me at that time, just in general. But it took 2 years because, like I said, the good and the bad. I ignored the bad because the good was so good and the bad was so bad. But you can't do that. That's a tactic. It's such a great, brilliant tactic that they do. What made me escape was I had started a job and I got my own money and I realized he was pulling money out of our account. So I opened up my own and he found out and he freaked out. We were fighting so badly that I had an extra twin mattress on the floor in one of the bedrooms I was sleeping on for over a month. Now I'm the mother and the matriarch of this household and I'm sleeping basically in a closet on the floor. we had stopped being out together. The times before we had gone out were those times when I woke up and I didn't know where I was. And I knew people were following me. I knew that if I went out with someone, that I was being questioned in a way that I knew, because he would say everybody has a price, meaning I can get, and he would pay people like, here, watch my wife for me. I knew that he was paying people to call me, to, you know, come on to me, to question everything about what was going on. Because he had something going on with his business also. So it got to be a point when I woke up in somebody else's house, and then I went to go get my car. My car had been moved. Remember, he had a tracker in my car, which my attorney now has. My car had been moved. I mean, you're talking about gaslighting like you've never seen. And I went and I had someone drop me off at a safe house, and I never looked back. I shouldn't say that. I never looked back to be with him. I shouldn't say that either. So I went to the safe house. Mm-hmm. But every day I went, my daughter was entering high school. So every day I drove in the dark from this safe house with her lunch already made to that house, woke her up, got her dressed, ready for school, took her and her friend to school, picked them up, snack, homework, like as I normally would, because he'd be out of the house. Made sure my son was good, what he was doing, I'd make them dinner, and then I'd leave if he was coming home. That was the hardest moment of my life. All those times, if he was staying out and going out doing whatever he was doing, I would stay there and have dinner of food that I got and food that I made, nothing from the house, because I was afraid to touch anything at that point, because I knew I didn't feel right. I knew that he wouldn't hurt the kids. I prayed that he wouldn't hurt the kids. So, and they wouldn't leave with me. That's why I had to go back there. They wouldn't leave. They didn't want to leave their rooms. My son didn't want to leave his Xbox. My daughter didn't want to leave her daughter. Like, they didn't want to leave. And these are problems. These are real big challenges. And this was the hardest decision to make, because I had to really decide whether or not he would hurt the kids. And I had to think no, because as my daughter says now, they're a reflection of him. Any narcissist with their children, you can play that game, because they are a reflection of that person, whether it be a man or a woman, husband, I mean, a mother or father. So I knew that he wouldn't hurt them. I knew that he'd want to take pictures of that, him taking them out to eat and posting them, so he looks like super dad. And I thought, okay, great. His own ego is going to protect them. Mm. But he, not me, not at all. Not me. You know, he would tell everybody that I was crazy, that I was an alcoholic, that I was a drug addict. He called all of my friends, the entire community. Meanwhile, in a month and a half, I got my own apartment, and then I got a job in my healthcare career, which I hadn't worked at in 20 years. And I started healing people, and I was drug tested because I thought I was going to die in the safe house. I knew that there was stuff in my system that I couldn't identify. And, you know, you could do a drug panel, but if you don't test for GHB, ketamine, certain opioids, if you don't test for things like Valium or, you know, Xanax, they're not going to show up. So when I left, I gathered all of the medication he had, because he had a friend that was a doctor. So he had me go on hormone replacement. He was giving me quote unquote B12 injections. Oh yeah, there was lots of stuff. He had creams. Yeah. So when I went to the house, yeah, I detoxed of something. I don't know. Yeah. He's got friends that are doctors. I found out all this stuff when I left, because I was still attached to him for like a good 6 months. So I could see the sun, I could see where he was going on the expressway. I could see the Walgreens. I could see health insurance stuff. Yeah, I could see all of it. So I did not know who and what I was dealing with. And then I found the scale underneath. And why does somebody have a scale in their bathroom cabinet? They're measuring and they're distributing. And that's, you know, it all happened all at once, where I was like, what is going on here? And so I knew that I had to get myself out and get myself well before I could really take full responsibility with my children. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the kids would be okay. So I ran like hell. And that family who I ostracized, they wrapped their arms around me literally. And I come from a big family. I'm the youngest of a lot of siblings. And they really took great care of me in all of their expertise. And one of them, she's all about, you know, God and spirituality. And that was something that I was very strong in. I always was, but all of those rituals that I used to do on a weekly basis, we stopped because he didn't want to do them. He wanted to go out and party. So I went back to Seder. I went back to tradition. I went back to my family. I went back to what I knew was my core without him for the first time in over 20 years. And I went back to work, and I went back to being humble and, you know, knowing that even though I spent time in houses, you know, that were worth millions, that I'm no different than any other person. I look like everybody else. My heart is the same. My body is the same. All of that. The trauma, whether you've had one bully issue or you had this, it's all the same. So when I walk around my home now, it's been a few years, I look around and I celebrate because I did this. And I did it on my own. I kept the roof up. I kept the food on the table. You know, this is the house where all the kids come. You know, we do celebrations. We do mini celebrations. We sing songs. We pray. We do all of that. And he told me that I could disappear and nobody would miss me, that I was not important. I'm an essential worker. I went back to work during COVID, and he's telling me that I wouldn't make it without him. I'd have no money. He wasn't going to give me anything. Well, you know, I stepped up my game and I put my heart out there, and I just loved people. And it's, you know, aside from a relationship, because I'm a little messed up in the relationship department, but, you know, when it comes to strangers, I mean, listen, we have so much love that's put inside of us. And I think that when we give it to other people, we're definitely going to get it back. And even if you don't get it back, that means that person needs love more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nothing was going to stop me. Nothing was going to change me. I wasn't going to get bitter. I don't hate men. You know, I again, forgive and I bless those people. They're still doing all that stuff. And I chose not to. And that's okay. You know, as long as no one hurts anyone, and God willing, they're not, but they're not hurting me anymore. He is a little bit, but that'll work itself out, because there's a vindicator. I will be vindicated. I truly believe that. And I'm not looking for him to, you know, go down by the wayside, quite the opposite, you know, because he is the father of my kids and I respect that. But I celebrate myself in little ways. Sometimes it's challenging because there's an ebb and flow, you know, it's like the roller coaster. Sometimes days are good, or it's not even days, it's moments. You know, those of us that have had some severe trauma, we can look a little schizophrenic at times, or, you know, borderline personality disorder, because it started with the emotional and the verbal abuse. You know, the Walking on Eggshells book is really, really good. You know, I read it again recently. I listened to it, and I had read that when we were still together, because it started off that way. You know, when somebody has a secret, they're not nice to you, even if you're nice to them, and you think they're just being mean, or they're just that person, but it's really that they have some sort of a secret, you know, and conversation is huge. Yes. So, yeah. So I celebrate myself by really, I love helping people. I actually, when I left and I was on my own, first I went cold turkey, like no drinking anything for 6 months, because I was really nervous about everything, you know, everything. And then I started, you know, then COVID hit and then everyone was drinking. And so, yeah. Right, everybody, you know, and then I went back to work during COVID and, you know, my patients were drinking, like, and then all of a sudden, like, I'm going out, and then I went to the other side and I'm like, I can do whatever I want to do, you know, like a little kid with the hands on the hips, you know, I'm doing the power stance. I could do whatever I want to do. Well, I didn't make such great choices, because when I was with him in the beginning, we'd go out, I'd be like, oh, I'm protected. I'm okay. Even though I wasn't. You know, I can have 2 drinks and I'll be fine. Well, again, 2 drinks for me and I'm like done, you know? And so I went the route where I had to go through that. It's almost like a rebellion of no one's going to control me. I'm going to control myself, you know? And then it's like, okay, well, let's, you know, walk into a few doors and fall down and hurt yourself a couple of times. And then I had one instance where I was really not nice to someone who didn't necessarily deserve it. And it was a wake up call. And so then I stopped the drinking again, because I was like, you know, what's the point? If your brain is not good, throwing a couple of drinks is not going to help it at all. you know, have a few sips, make it controlled, do it in your home, you know, don't do shots. Don't do shots and be out there in a crowd with lots of music. Because anyone who's gone through trauma and has PTSD, that environment will trigger you to the max. A lot of the stuff happened to me at bars. I've been to one of the restaurants. The last time I went to one of the restaurants that he and I used to go to and he would really do stuff, I ended up in an ambulance. That's how triggered I was. Oh yeah, I was really, and this was only last year. Whether or not something happened, because there was another couple that I was talking to and I was with somebody and I actually had a phone call with my boss and he's like, are you okay? You don't sound right. And I'm really solid. Like, this is me all the time. And sure enough, 10 minutes later, I'm in an ambulance fighting for my, I thought I was going to die. But where I live, it happens often, unfortunately. But, you know, and it's like, well, because I wanted to face all of these places again and change the narrative, right? But some places you just don't need to do that with. And you know what? You really don't. And, you know, there's so many places to go and restaurants and bars and clubs or whatever, events, meetup groups. You don't need to go backwards to go forwards. You really don't. And I really learned that. I don't need to face those physical areas. I want to face the emotions because I want to help as many people as I possibly can on that trauma number line from zero to infinity. And in order, I think, for me to do it is I need to feel it. I know what it's like to have, you know, $100 in your account and have to feed your children. And somebody owes you thousands of dollars, but won't give it to you, even though they're legally supposed to. I know what it's like to, you know, feel completely alone. I know what it's like to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and have a panic attack out of nowhere. I know what it's like to go to work working on somebody, whether you're a hairdresser or you're in the fields or you're whatever it is, you're in a team meeting and all of a sudden you get a flashback or you hear a song in the car and you got your kids in the car and all you want to do is scream and cry and you can't, or you want to stay in bed, but you can't. I know what all of that is like. So the places stay away from, the loud noises, it's going to trigger you some form. So celebrations is just being thank you. It's just saying thank you. It's really easy, actually. It doesn't take a lot.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for sharing. I hope anyone who's heard this story, your truth and just your experience is able to walk with that. And any individual that's going through the same situation, find that courage to leave, to escape, or build something for themselves so that they can ease their way on out as best as they can, because we all deserve happiness in this life. Absolutely. We all deserve to live in a space of peace in our minds, our living arrangements, our surroundings, all of that, to just experience happiness. Because yes, we live in a very horrible world, but at the same time, we can make our world better. We can make our lived experiences a lot better just by choosing to remove ourselves from the trauma, to put ourselves in spaces that makes us feel happy, makes us feel whole, makes us feel loved and appreciated. So yeah. I truly appreciate you for sharing.
I have one more thing. So I told you my daughter volunteers for Planned Parenthood and, you know, fights for human rights and women's rights. And we talk about this all the time. The statistics are that, you know, same-sex couples have twice as much domestic violence and sexual abuse and non-consensual acts placed on them, more so than heterosexual couples. There's so much help out there now.
Yeah.
If you need, reach out to me on my website and I'll get you those references. There's so much help for anybody out there. There's financial help out there. There's counseling. There's free counseling. There's so many organizations, but I want you to be aware. And even I have friends that are same-sex couples and like men that have been together for 40 years, and there's abuse there, just like there would be in heterosexual couples. And just like Vernon said, like everyone deserves happiness, and it's our time to get that. It's your birthright. It's your birthright. You were created to be happy and to enjoy every part of this world.
That part. Oh, yeah. And the website will be in the show notes for everybody who's looking for it. I'm also going to put the link to Walking on Eggshells, that book. So for anybody who wants to read that. So to brighten up things a little bit.
Yes, let's do it. we could switch it all around, Smiley.
Right. So we're going to do this one, Would You Rather, and then I'll close out the episode and then, you know, leave with a positive note.
Okay, always.
So would you rather have more foreplay in your life or have more sex?
Can I say it depends who's doing each?
See, Michelle, you're like me, because whenever I come across like questions like this, I'm like,
I want all the options. Give me the option. The question should be, like, I'm telling you what to do on your own show. Would you rather give more foreplay or participate more sex? Right? That's a good one too.
Let's see.
It depends. I don't know. The foreplay is a good thing.
It is such an amazing thing.
It just depends. Like, who's giving it? I mean, listen, we all know. I don't understand. So here's the bright side. I went through all of that horrible stuff, but I still love sexuality and sensuality and consensual sex. And, you know, I got to find that back in me. We've talked about that, you know, but still, I love it. And you just have to laugh because, listen, my parents had a lot of kids for a reason. You know, we always talked about sex. God bless them. But I would definitely say foreplay. But I don't know, because I'm like, at some point, like, give it to me. But the whole foreplay thing, I'm not going to give you my secrets, but there are reasons for that. It would be pleasurable for both participants.
I understand. Like, I know for me, I feel like I want to say foreplay if it's not like sucking dick, because that's like, if I'm open to it, but that's not going to be something I want to do all the time. But like, I do enjoy the, like, giving pleasure to other people.
Yes.
So the foreplay aspect, like, if I can do a lot more of that, great, love that for me. But the only thing is, it's like, if I'm going to indulge like foreplay, I want there to be like a good 3 to 4 hours of time that I have. Even if it doesn't take that much time to like get to a point of satisfaction, I just want to take my time and enjoy it.
Absolutely.
And for me, just saying more sex, that just means, okay, we're just going to,
right,
like, you know, ejaculate, whatever.
I've met
the orgasm. Okay, cool. Give me another one. Give me another one.
Right.
It doesn't give me the pleasure all the way, all throughout.
Right.
Because like, just reaching orgasm doesn't mean that I'm done. I may still want a little bit more. I still may want a little bit more. I will want more foreplay. So like, if it's more sex, that means we're just going to be doing multiple rounds, and that's great, that's good, it's a workout, it's exercise. But like, I would rather just have something like, I'm enjoying this AC, so let's go ahead and just keep that going.
That's so true.
Like,
there's nothing worse than like getting overheated during sex. But I will say this, first of all, I feel for you, because as a woman, multiples are multiples for some of us, and my body reacts very quickly to, well, anything, but especially foreplay, like splash zone. Hello. There needs to
love
be like
for you.
pad on the bed. There's gotta be towels. Like, it's a splash zone. Like, it's a funny, funny thing anyway. So yeah, I mean, listen, a girl can be very happy in that realm. And you know what? It wouldn't hurt if there were some snacks on the side of the bed, for God's sakes. Like,
yes, right? I love the way you sex. Yes, right? yes.
I mean, popsicles. You could use them. Yeah, you could use them, or you could have them because you get hungry. I mean, listen, you know, see, that's the kind of wife I was, right? What? Who's giving that away? Like, come on, man.
Child.
Right? Still, look, even more so. And now it's like, anyone's lucky if they come near me. That's the difference. And that's what we have to get to on the other side of that rainbow, that healing rainbow, I call it.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
You go from, oh yeah, you don't deserve me. Hell no. So, but yeah, so foreplay, yeah, listen, I could go for hours. I might be dehydrated unless some Gatorade's on the side.
Oh God.
Right.
Yes.
You know, the floor is slippery, the sheets are gone. Like, forget it. It's like, it's, yeah, it is. It's a thing. Right.
Allow the tornado to run mm-hmm. through the house. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. But you know what's so nice about foreplay is there's so much intimacy that's possible also.
Yes.
Because if you look at foreplay from the head to the toe, from the top of the head to the bottom of the feet and ears and mind and all of that, it could be enough. Mm-hmm. It really could be enough. And that's where connection is. I mean, sometimes it's quick because it has to be. And then there are other times. Listen, on Father's Day, my ex used to get a 2-hour massage, which included all that. And on his birthday. I mean, right? Mm. That was the agreement. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I know. Listen, God bless from afar. Enjoy right. yourself.
Right.
So, oh. I know.
Well, on that note, Michelle, uh-huh. thank you so much. I appreciate right. you.
Flash zone. Everyone put on their goggles. Keep so, your hands. And, yeah.
Do you have any last words that you would like to share with the audience before I close this out?
Oh, people, trust your instincts. Mm. I mean, not that I do it all the time now still, but I mean, you know, we're going to listen. We're going to stumble. We're going to fall. We're going to cut ourselves, so to speak. You know, we're going to question our instincts, like, but he's so cute. I mean, you know, but deep down, eventually you will. But there's a fine line of trust your instincts. You think someone's cheating on you, then there's a fine line of someone's being abusive to you.
Mm.
So if you think they're cheating and you're still not ready to go, that's totally on you. I have no judgment. It's totally on you. If they're cute, it's really hard, but or whatever. But on the other side, if there's abuse there in any sense, get out. Get out. Contact me. I'll tell you how to do it. There's a strategy. There are many strategies. And I was able to do it and do it safely, which was a miracle because of what was going on for me.
Yes.
So, but trust your instincts and have fun. Like you said, celebrate. And thank you for teaching me that always.
Of course. Well, yeah. Thank you again. So for the listeners out there, thank you all so much for listening to the whole, oh Lord, I don't know what just happened. back that up again. Thank you all so much for listening to the Holiloquy podcast, where we step out and speak on sexuality. Just in case no one else told you this today, you are beautiful. You are worthy of happiness and joy. You are enough and then some. You may not live up to the expectations of others, but that is okay. You are only required to walk in your own shoes. May each day you live lead you towards abundance. With that said, love you all and see you next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Holiloquy podcast, where we step out and speak on sexuality. You can subscribe to the podcast through your favorite podcasting app and find us on the web at www.holiloquy.com. That's www.HEAUXLILOQUY.com. Share the podcast with your friends and join the conversation.